will be Carol P. from Richmond, West Virginia. Richmond, Virginia. Sorry, Richmond, Virginia.
I'm an ad named Carol. And that humor helps some of the nervousness go down. It is Virginia. I'm grateful to be here. I want to thank the CNP Convention of Narcotics Anonymous for inviting me to come up once again to share my experience, strength, and hope on the courage to change. You know, God's in the house. I'm happy tonight, you know. Thomas P. gave a powerful message tonight, you know. And that's the kind of stuff that boosts me up, you know. You know, we're in a place where people are looking good, feeling good, getting along. Nobody's fighting. You know, nobody's arguing. I haven't heard any of that since I've been here. You know, it's been peaceful. There's been lots of love and respect. You know, and this is a change for me. You know, on this journey, this is a definite change for me. Because, you know, before I came to Narcotics Anonymous, I had plenty of drama and chaos, and I lived in a lot of danger. You know, I was one of those addicts, and I didn't hear this until I got to Narcotics Anonymous. I jumped in the ring with the gorilla on a daily basis. You know, I was one of those hard-headed, rebellious, looking for trouble addict. Hope to die dope fiend. Didn't know that. You know, nobody had ever pulled my coat on that. You know, they told me I was insane and crazy, and I was living on the edge, you know, but I didn't know that until I came to Narcotics Anonymous. You know, that I was a drama queen. You know, I was truculent, easy to fight, curse people out. You know, I was good and crazy when I got here. You know, and like Thomas said, today I'm not like that. You know, I'm getting better, I'm improving, and there's always room for improvement. You know, change was not easy for me. You know, I was locked and loaded. I was 39 when I came to Narcotics Anonymous. I thought I did a little living. You know, I'd been some places, did some stuff. I had my set way of doing things and my set ideas. You know, and I never ran anything by anybody. I didn't talk my business. You know, I come from the code of silence in the street. You know, I wasn't used to asking anybody for any suggestions or talking to anybody or listening to anybody that had any of the same. I don't ever remember getting any feedback from anybody other than they said, that bitch is crazy. You know, get out of the way. The dope man said, kill her. Don't talk to her. Just give her the damn dope and put her out. Don't even talk to her. You know. When I left the streets, I was one of those addicts. The judge didn't give me an opportunity to go to treatment. So if I tell you, I had a judge in my life when I came to Narcotics Anonymous. In fact, it was a judge who sent me to my first Narcotics Anonymous meeting. I wouldn't admit to him that I was an addict. A lot of things had happened to me. My son, I was in California, and one of the reasons I liked California, the weather didn't change most of the time. You know, I was in Oakland and San Francisco, and you could walk barefooted most of the time. And that's how my life had become, wearing leather dresses and barefoot. You know, with my hair cut short, a blonde piece of hair hanging down in front and one in the back. You know, good and crazy. You know, I walked the streets an awful lot, you know, and doing my step work, I really realized that God was with me all the time. You know, I had never read the poem on Footprints until I came to Narcotics Anonymous, and I said, oh my God, he was there for me all the time. And incidentally, I didn't have a problem with the word God. I was raised in a Christian family. I went to church at least 3 times a week, and we had to go on Sunday morning, then leave at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. We ate our rolls and chicken in church. You know, so I was familiar with God. I wasn't afraid of the word God. So if there's anybody in here who's afraid, you know, I make no apology for it. You know, you will find one if you stay here. You know, they told me that if you don't think there's a power greater, you go to the morgue and put on an alarm clock and see who gets up. You know, if you don't really believe it, you know, and look at your life and see, you know, did you get you here? Are you responsible for living? I knew when I came to Narcotics Anonymous that it was God saving my life. You know, the lady who's my sponsor today, we used for about 2 decades. We did a lot of things together. You know, we've had lots of money, lots of dope, and had some hard times, some good times, and some rough times. You know, our disease took us to the gutter. You know, we you know, and so she knew me. She knew that they thought I had died in Mexico. I was a transporter across the United States, and I got caught up with some people who were dead when I came out to make my drop. And I did get arrested, was held by the Mexican police, but fortunately I was let go, which that was only God. You know, it wasn't my doing. I think I was slicker than. I was grateful to get the hell out of it then, way before I came to Narcotics Anonymous. You know, but my mother and my friends, my family thought I was dead. And she went to my mother and told her my story. She said, if she's not dead, tell her I found the answer. I found the way out, that she doesn't have to live like that anymore. Well, of course, when I called my mom, which I was calling for money, you know, I wasn't calling to say, hello, how y'all doing? You know, my calls to my family was to get some money. And if they didn't send me any money, I didn't speak to them for months, sometimes years. And I told my mom that I needed some money. And she began to tell me the story about what, you know, Nancy had told her, you know, that she'd gotten arrested and some things had happened to her, but she'd found a program that would save my life. I said, I don't want to hear no sad stories. Either you're going to send the money or not. But the seed was planted. So, you know what, I know that when we carry the message, we are not responsible for the results. You know, we are only responsible for the effort. Because I've had many, many addicts just from my own experience, I remembered. Because it took me 2 years to get back on the East Coast. And that phone call I made after being back in Richmond and not being able to make this game work anymore, not being able to use, and got put out, you know, it was a liquor house that I had turned into a dope house. A good friend of mine that I grew up with gave me the opportunity, gave me somewhere to stay. Because my son was taken into foster care, and my husband had been arrested and got sent to Leavenworth. And a big drug deal in Oakland, California, got busted and went to Leavenworth. And as I know it, you know, and it was only God, put him in his cell with my husband at that time. And he said, man, is this your wife? He said, this broad is crazy and running rampant in Oakland, California. He says, your child has been abandoned and everything. Well, my husband wrote from Leavenworth to the social service people and asked that he be sent to a relative. And he was sent to my mom. You know, they flew him from Oakland into Richmond, and my mother took care of him. But my mother had custody of my son. I had a lot of shame and guilt about that by the time I got here. At the time, I thought it was a great decision. You know, I was free. I could run rampant and not having the guilt that my child wasn't eating and was left abandoned at home most of the time. I had an older son. I tried to get him to go into service. I was trying to get him killed. And he hadn't seen his father in 10 years. And when he went down to be inducted at the induction office, his father gave him his x-ray. He hadn't seen his father in 10 years. So that was the only good thing that came out of that, you know. And they do have a good relationship today, but it was a long, long history then, a long time coming. But so I came back to Richmond. And I had a warrant for me to go to court. And the judge said that if I didn't get my life together, they were going to lock me up. And he wanted to make, he said, you're an addict. I said, I'm not an addict. He said, oh, shut up and sit down. He said, give her this meeting schedule. I want you at the VA hospital tonight. There's a meeting, and I want you over there. I said, man, I ain't no vet. He said, see what I mean? Don't you open your mouth no more. You know, just go to the meet, and you're to report to these people, and gave me some instructions and things to follow. And I began to do that. Well, I didn't know it, so I called Nancy, and I said, look, they got me going over this to this meeting over at the VA. Would you go with me? She said, sure, I'll go with you. And I remember that guy, he's still clean today. It's been almost 24 years later. You know, he talked about relapse, scared the hell out of me. He talked about going to jail every time he used. He talked about the devastating effect that it had on his family, his wife, and his children. You know, he was telling my story that he was a suffering addict. And that's when I got in touch that I was a suffering, hard-headed, rebellious addict. And I suffered way past the expiration date because I was hard-headed, self-willed, you know, to the core. You know, my mother used to say that I was self-willed. I was a born liar and self-willed from the womb. So, you know, I started very early, way before I picked up any drugs. You know, I always drank liquor and smoked cigarettes because they were available to me in my neighborhood. We had stills and cone liquor, so I drank liquor and smoked cigarettes naturally. Not because I wanted to fit in, not because, you know, everybody was doing it. It was there. We had shopping bags. People used to come home from the tobacco company with loose cigarettes, you know. And I didn't smoke, I smoked Pall Mall, Camels, you know, cigarettes that didn't have filters for years. You know, and drank cone liquor. You know, it was a natural growth process for me growing up as a kid. I didn't think it was a big deal. You know, alcohol was legal, so that couldn't possibly be a drug. You know, but I had to become indoctrinated. I had to change my way of thinking. I didn't think when I got clean in Richmond, Virginia, there were only 5 black people clean. So, you know, I had to adjust to that. You know, well, you know, I got high with all kinds of people. You know, Linda asked me wasn't going to tell the story about the Japanese guy that, you know, I lived with for 9 months and he never spoke English. We met in line in Berkeley, California, you know, while I was waiting to cop dope. And he was fumbling with his money. He couldn't get his money right. And didn't know. So I helped him get his order on what he wanted to order. Got it right. And when he left, I left with him because he had a hotel room. You know, and then he got a room. He had some money coming in. So his family was sending him a lot of money. He had a trust fund. And we stayed together for 9 months, and he never spoke English. And we communicated very well. So, you know, you don't need to speak the same language to get high. Trust me, honey. You know. So I had to learn. So it didn't matter. I used any. I didn't need to know your name. If you had the package, we was there. You know, I went where the dope was. You know, I was willing to do whatever it took to get some dope. You know, I was one of those addicts when I heard to let you live, to use and use to live. You know, they invited me. They told me when I came to my first meeting, they invited me in and they set me down. They said, "Welcome. We heard about you." You know, and they began to tell me that a dope fiend like me, if that didn't change, I was going to die. They told me two things on my way to my seat at my first Narcotics Anonymous meeting. That this is an honest program and your secrets will keep you sick. I said, damn, I ain't opened my mouth yet. You know, but I said, they ain't got to worry about that because I'm not talking to anybody. I ain't got a damn thing to say. I wasn't one of these ass who came up here talking. I ain't want to talk to no damn body about nothing. I was angry that I had to be here. You know, I didn't understand. This is my first time coming into Narcotics Anonymous, and they gave me instructions. You know, they told me, change. You got to do things. We don't live. And the answer echoed, we don't live like that anymore, Carol. You know, I came in tricking. You know, I didn't have any money. They said, the behavior is going to take you back out. You can no longer do that. Stop. They waited for me and told the people that I would get up, jump out the car with and say, don't come back no more. Go back and tell them people you're not going to see them no more. I said, no. They're paying me. I'm getting paid good money. You know? They said, but we can't. You got to stop. You cannot live like that. We are afraid for you. You know, I heard somebody last night at the workshop talk about how they used to confront us. You know, when they saw us with our behavior, they told us point blank, that's going to kill you. That's the, they used to set us down and tell us. That's the kind of behavior. And they said, oh, smart addicts like you, too. I had a master's degree. And they were talking among themselves. They said, you know, smart addicts have a hard time with this program. They tend to pass right by them. I said, oh, my God, they're talking about me. You know, hint to the wise is sufficient. You know, my grandmother and my aunt used to say that all the time. You know, a hint to the wise is sufficient. And when I heard those kinds of things, you know, they told me, girl, a dope fiend like you, you need a program. You know, and even before I did my first step, I knew that I was my worst enemy. Nobody could do me like you could do me. You know, nobody can do me like I can do me. You know, I got self-destructive, inborn, destructive behavior. You know, like I said, I was in the ring with the gorilla. I was the one that when we used to go to AA meetings to talk about expect a baseball bat when you go outside the door. You know, I invited trouble. You know, I did it my way. I love Frank Sinatra and Tammy Davis Jr. when that was my song. I did it my way. Yeah, I sure did. And it landed me a seat in Narcotics Anonymous. My way caused almost, I was left to die twice because my greed, and I didn't want to leave the dope package. You know, I could have escaped, but hey, they ain't going to do nothing to me. I'm going to be all right, you know. But I suffered. I suffered a lot because I wasn't willing to change. I wasn't willing to do anything. I kept using. At all cost, I used. At all cost. You know, so I know the ingrained nature of this disease. You know, I went through an awful lot. My family disowned me. My children suffered. You know, my youngest son and I, we've had a very rough relationship. He tells me oftentimes, you still ain't out of the woods, P. You know, because we still have some unresolved issues. You know, it's gotten a lot better. You know, he's threatened to kill me. He's threatened to do a lot of things to me. I've had to have him arrested. In fact, I've had to have both of my sons arrested. That was change. That was different. Because, see, I was taught that you don't let white folks get in your business. You don't call the police. You handle it. You know, and when I had to call the police for my son, you know, that was one of the hardest things that I had to do. You know, I had to really pray. It was like, you know, my feet weighed a ton to walk down to the magistrate's office to take out a warrant. And then my oldest son was using crack in my house. And I told him not to use in there. He was working, and I found it, and I told him he had to leave. He was packing his clothes. He turned around. He says, look, you, if you want me to leave, you got to call the police. And I said, I don't want to be the one. And I had to do that. Those have been things. And because I've had a sponsor, I had some, my spiritual conditioning had gotten better since I've been here, you know, and I was able to get through those things. I've recently had to let go of a 9-year relationship. And I love this person dearly. We've spent 9 years, 5 of those years were good. But for the last 3 years, he hasn't been able to get a year, in a last, you know, to put a year together for 3 years. You know, and what, you know, the I guess the calendar broke, the straw that broke the camel's back was he fucked with my money. You know, yeah, that was a spiritual awakening of letting go. Of letting go. You know. Now, you know, if that's what it took, hey, okay. You know, he had never, then I recognized the progression of disease because he had never gone that far before. You know, there were some things he still was doing, some things that he did not do, even though he was using. He didn't fuck with my shit, you know. And I was getting ready to get violent. You know, I had a broom in my hand when he told me, and he was talking. And I started, I was giving the jab, the broom down his throat, and I thought about a jail cell. I had a flash. You know, I don't want to go to jail clean today. I don't have to. It's the choices that I make. But I also recognized that how the disease was affecting me, you see. And I had a way out, you know. And my sponsor and I had did a lot of sharing, and I've done a lot of praying on this. And so I had to really let go. You know, I had to have the courage to change my attitude about it. You know, and I heard Thomas P. said that, you know, God, this the change is for me. You know, I felt some freedom this weekend. You know, sure I miss him. Sure I've had some sleepless nights. You know, there's some things, you know, I got to get somebody to cut my grass now. You know, because my son is allergic to grass. There's some things, you know, that you as a couple do that is not happening now, you know. But I can live through them. You know, this program has given me the courage to walk in faith. You know, God has brought me out. My clean date is October 27, 1986. You know, I've gone through federal marshals coming to lock me up when I was 30 days clean, you know, to my depths of 6 family members, my mom. You know, all kinds of financial situations have happened to me. You know, I've had turmoil in my family. You know, it hasn't been just a smooth ride. You know, I had to learn to pray early because when the IRS told me they were going to send the federal marshals after me, I said, I ain't no mafia. They don't send no federal marshals, no peon like me. Well, when they came to the door, I ran out the back door. And I ran to the meeting, and the people in the meeting gave me courage to turn myself in. Of course, I thought they was going to give me a solution. You know, I ran to me and said, oh, the federal marshal's after me. They said, come in and have a seat. We're going to encourage you and help you to turn yourself. I said, turn myself in? That wasn't the answer I was looking for. But they gave me the courage to call them and say, where I live, and it's okay to come back, and I'm going to be there, you know. And it took me 7 years paying those people, you know. And after that, I was able to get free and got through that, you know. I went through some changes with them. They're not the nicest people in the world. You know, they've gotten a little bit better. But let me tell you, they don't play. And I had to deal with them, you know. I hit 3 parked cars when I was clean. It was snow on the ground. And I hit these 3 parked cars. And I looked around, and I saw just 2 drunks sitting over there. I said, oh, damn. So I went on. I left the scene. Well, the detectives came. I was living with Nancy at that time, who is my sponsor today. And we walked out on the porch to go to a meeting, and they asked, they said, we're looking for so-and-so, and both of us looked at each other. And she said, well, I'm certainly not her. I said, me either. I went to the meeting again and told them the detectives were, they said, we're going to encourage you to turn yourself in. I said, oh, God, not again. You know. And they assigned Chicago John to go to court with me. See, at that time, when you were going through stuff, they assigned people to go with you. You know, they encourage you, set you up, and push you straight up and say, you can do this. We're going to help you, and we're going to show you, and we're going to so support you and love you through it. And, you know, I had to have the faith, and I've been through so many things like that, you know, because I could not do this alone. I've never been through anything in Narcotics Anonymous by myself. Now I read that that was invited. Well, this book was not available in 1986, but we finally got it through the Conference Agenda Report. And I hope all of you participated in the Conference Agenda Report. See, that's different too. You know, addicts attending business meetings. See, I had to learn to sit still. I heard Thomas P. talk about completing a meeting. They told me, you know, addicts used to be one. I ain't never completed nothing in my whole life. They said, well, complete a damn meeting. Come in, sit down, go to the bathroom before you get here, eat before you come, and stay to the end of the meeting, because there is something magic that happens. You know, you don't get the full benefit. You know, I get disturbed when I'm in meetings, and when they get ready to give out the key tags or do the announcement, groves, aisles of people get up and walk outside. You know, that's amazing to me. You know, we were guided not to do that. You know, a newcomer asked me in a meeting, she said, well, where are they going? Why do they leave? I said, ask them. Ask them where they're going and why they leave out the meeting. You know, we need to be there to hear the announcements. We need to be there to support the people who pick up the key tags, especially the newcomers. You know, we need to hug everybody. You know, we need to be able to take the newcomer. If we're sitting outside, who's going to take the newcomer to the literature table? Who's going to encourage them to get phone numbers, to go walk up to people and let them know? Who's going to tell them how to fill in the gap, to know how to keep coming back? You know, we have to learn to have patience and tolerance with people. You know, I'm just as self-centered as anybody else when I got here. But I had to learn how to get outside of me. You know, of course, I thought the world was centered around me. I used to tell the people my job, y'all better be glad I came. You know, as long as I could keep a job. But that was my attitude. If I'm late, don't you dare say nothing. You better be glad I got here. You need me. You know, I was just that stupid and arrogant. You know? And that's how I carried it. So by the time I came to Narcotics Anonymous, hey, self-centered, I understood. You know, I was impressed with the literature in Narcotics Anonymous. You know, when the literature is so positive. You know, I see so many people don't read the literature. You know, I used to curl up at night in the bed and just read. I was so impressed that there was a program here to save my life. You know, I was used to using tools because I kept any tool to use in the trunk of my car. You know, and they gave me some new tools, you know, to ask for help. They said, you didn't mind confronting the dope man. You went and got your dope. If you can cop dope, you can stay clean. You know, you weren't afraid to ask the dope man for nothing. You know, ask folks for their numbers. Call them up. You know, we sure got the gift of gab. You know, we can talk the drawers off you, man. You know? They said, flip it. All that energy you put in to copping, put it into getting clean, getting some recovery. And then if you don't get the NA way, what a sufficient message you going to give to anybody? How you going to sponsor people and you're not an active participant? You don't do no service work. Thomas talked about cleaning ashtrays. We scrub floors. We wash walls. We clean the bathrooms out. We left the place better than we got it. You know, they told me that service work will keep you clean. I jumped in. I did whatever. You know, I'm the chair of my area for the third time. And it ain't always comfortable sitting up there and folks disrespecting and talking among themselves and creating havoc. You know, but I keep going back. You know, I've been in service ever since I've been 7 days clean. And I don't have no reason to stop. You know, I don't have any particulars that I will do in Narcotics. Ain't nothing I say I ain't going to do in Narcotics Anonymous. I just can't wait to be. We can't get a GSR to commit. Our home group will be celebrating 25 years in October. And this is the first time we've had not had a GSR to want to commit. And when they called their name, my home group in every service Sunday, and the person wasn't there, I was pissed. We don't run it like that, you know. So, you know, when my term is up with you, I'm going back to be GSR, you know, because I'm committed. You know, I've been given the courage to stand up and shown how to live in Narcotics Anonymous, how to change my ways. You know, because I was just as nasty and low down as anybody else could be. Start some shit if you want, because I can get just as crazy as you can get. You know, I can remember standing on the table at area service when I was about a year clean. Stood up on top of the table and cursed the wife and said, y'all some racist motherfuckers. They said, you're wrong, we love you. I was a newsletter chair. And this girl kept giving me Jesus articles. It sounded good to me. I was all right with Jesus articles. You know, and the Lord. They said, you are breaking tradition. So they approached me 2 or 3 times. I said, shit, ain't nothing wrong. They just ain't got no God. They scared of God. And my self-will, They said, Billy E sat me down and tried to explain it to me. So their home group voted to ban, to just have no newsletters for a while. They said, you ain't approachable. So we're not going to give no money. And we, I jumped on top of that. If I was a white girl, y'all wouldn't be doing this shit. They said, Carl, you're wrong. We love you. And the three black people that was in the room walked out. I said, where y'all going? You know, leaving me up in here by myself. We was in a barn in the Ku Klux Klan barn in Chesterfield County. And I said, oh my God, ain't but one door out this bitch. And I'm standing on top of the table. And my sponsor, Nancy, was saying, get down, Carol, get down. Get. I said, fuck this shit, I ain't scared of these motherfuckers. Insane. I finally got down. We got to the 8 o'clock meeting. At the end of the meeting, all those people stood in line and gave me a hug. And they said, Carol, you are wrong, but we love you. They gave me love. I got home, I felt like a fool. I felt like a real fool. What did it accomplish? But that was me. I came here as I was, as Carol sees it. And this program has turned me around. You know, I love Narcotics Anonymous. I love service work. I've learned to grow. I've learned to get better on my job, with my children. I'd have group consciousness in my home, with my family. I've learned to have patience with folks. You know, I've learned to get outside of myself. And it's not about me. You know, the world does not revolve around me. I love Narcotics Anonymous, and I'll keep coming back. Thank you.
All right, this time I'd like to introduce our second speaker. This is Kirk R. from Dayton, Ohio.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, my name is Kirk. I'm an addict. I don't know, man. I want to thank God, man. I'm always nervous when I get to share, but there's a prayer in the beginning of the basic text, right? And I always hook it up, man, and it kind of settled me down. They did it when they were compiling the literature. Is we call it in Dayton, we call it the service prayer. The prayer goes, God grant us knowledge and literature to say that we may write according to your divine precepts. God, that I may share according to your divine precepts. Instill in me a sense of your purpose. Grant me a bond of selflessness. Make me a servant of your will, that this may truly be your work. That no addict anywhere seeking recovery need die from the horrors of addiction. So I thank God, man. I thank God. I want to thank the Chesapeake Potomac Regional Convention of Narcotics Anonymous, right? I'm from DASNA, the Dayton Area Service Committee of Narcotics Anonymous. Look, my home group is clean on Friday. We meet Friday nights, man, at 7:30. You always welcome to any meeting in Narcotics Anonymous. I ain't got to tell you welcome my home group. You welcome to any meeting in Narcotics Anonymous. Look, I want to thank Ohio, man. I want to thank, man, I love y'all, man. Jimmy, I love you, boy, for real. Look, we drove 10 hours to get here. Talking about 10 hours, man. 4 o'clock in the morning, we got here at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Right? I love what she was sharing. Look, man, look, I came in here. Look, my man always thought, look, I came in here. We say in the Dayton area, a good ass whooping will go a long way. Right? I came in here, man. Look, in the end, I live with my ex-wife and her boyfriend in the fucking basement. Right? The literature say we form strange habits and mannerisms. I don't know about y'all. That's some strange shit to me. But I got okay with it. Right? I'm talking about what this thing, we talking about courage to change, man. Right? I'm talking about when I came up in here, I was a fucking bum. Look. Take the cut out your story. Tell yourself your story slowly, man. Tell the truth. God, that's why I love what she was sharing. When I look, man, and people get pissed off at this, I don't care. I'm not saying this is where you need to come from. I come from the shut the fuck up era. Look, and if people get it wrong, it's not like we telling you to shut the fuck up. It's like when we have topic discussion meetings, what they saying is, that's when you need to be putting a damn topic on the floor. But otherwise, shut the fuck up. That's what they mean, man. Look, that kept me in the ball game, man. I had to find my right size. So we talking about courage to change, man. Our literature, look.
Look, it's an absolute honor. Anytime you ask to share in Narcotics Anonymous, I'm talking about absolute honor. Look, when we talk about the word absolute, look, there's a mathematical principle, right? We talk about absolute, look, there's the absolute value of a number. Whether the number is a negative number, if you got a negative 8 or a positive 8, the absolute value of that number is 8. In other words, it don't give a fuck, just like we don't care where you come from, your connections, or none of that. It's the same thing that God felt with us. Whether we were in the negative, in active addiction, or in the positive, God loves us nevertheless. So look, man, I just want to, look, I'm tired. I don't like 10 o'clock workshops. I turned 51 this year. Look, my clean date is August 23rd, 1991, right? Turned 51 this year, and it's like I can't stay up like I used to. No pun intended. In more ways than one. Things change, man, when you come in here, but it's the courage to change. I told you I was a bum. Look, man, people come in here, they act all, you know, like they got it all together, man. Look, man, something wrong with me, man. I always share that. You sitting in the Narcotics Anonymous meeting, right? Something bad happened to your ass. People just don't come to Narcotics Anonymous to chill. So quit fronting. Y'all fucked up like I'm fucked up. That's what it is, man. Look, I tried to graduate from a two-year college from 1976 to 1991. If you can't get out of two-year college in 15 years, something going on with you on a deeper level, man. You need to know that. Right, there's some things that's just going on, and the literature talks about a fundamental transformation. I'm a literature man. People, look, I don't know what it is. People scared to bring literature to a Narcotics Anonymous meeting. I don't get it. I got a set of readings in this motherfucking. Look. I got a podium in here. I'm not scared, man, of Narcotics Anonymous literature in a Narcotics Anonymous meeting. This shit saved our lives, right? So we act like we scared. I heard somebody say, I was up on the East Coast, I guess a couple of months ago, somebody was talking about they don't want us to read to them. Some of y'all need to be the fucking read to. Huh? Some of y'all need to hear a good story for real. Right? But we talking about changing, man. We talking about a fundamental transformation. We talking about the courage to change, right? I don't want my life to be the same way it was, man. The fourth step talks about we lived a sort of half-life, right? Going through the motions, but never being fully alive. Look, it works in works high and wide. Said we accepted life by default. So I need to look. They say, look, first step in here talks about all the lies, all the rationalizations, all the illusions fade away as we stand face to face with what our life had become. What was your life like? Do you remember the desperation? The literature say in desperation. Do you remember the desperation? We playing with people's lives. So what was it, man? What is it that you needed? Look, I needed God to come into my life. I ain't talking about no religious God. I love what she said. Second step talks about in Narcotics Anonymous, we are not concerned here. This is the second step, step working God, with theological elegance and doctrinal adherence. Right? All that fluffy stuff. What we want is something that works. In our meetings, man, in our meetings, there's an energy, there's a force. This program has the power to change lives. Right? That two-year college that I talked about, I ended up teaching economics at the same college I couldn't get out of 15 years. I'm talking about something happened. God changed my heart, man. He changed my fucking heart. Come on. I was a bum. He did something, man. We talk about internal, fundamental transformation. Recovery and relapse talks about God will change my inner motivation. Right? I'm talking about the things, man, that used to motivate me don't motivate me no more. He changed my inner motivation, man. It says our minds and bodies seem tired of it all, yet the dynamic forces of change or true conversion deep within may be working to give us the answers that alter our inner motivation and change our lives. And before that, man, I mean, talking about our minds and bodies may feel tired of it all. So it may feel monotonous coming to meetings, showing up. Change don't always appear as change. Pain, change sometimes appears as the fucking same or a reversal of things, right? It don't appear as change. Like the literature talks about, if I expect the steps to do the same thing that the drugs did, we talking about being trapped by the need for instant gratification. If I accept, like we was talking about earlier, look, I was looking for a magic cure to solve my ultimate problems. I just wanted shit to just poof, change. I'm talking about trap. The literature, I'm talking about we got a disease to tell us we ain't got a disease. Look, the literature say it's a cunning enemy of life. We got a disease, man. Look, they've been fucking me up for years. Now I got a solution, an answer to my problem. If I surrender to the program. First step. It works how and why. Let's see. Surrender. There's a huge difference between resignation and surrender. Resignation is what we feel when we've realize we're addicts but haven't yet accepted recovery as the solution to our problem. There's many addicts today right now resigned to the fact. I remember smoking crack, standing out, right, been out there for a 3 or 4 day run with crumbs in my pocket, right, telling motherfuckers, man, I'm fucked up. I was resigned to the fact that I was an addict long before I came to the program. But they say, here, look, many have found ourselves at this point long before coming to Narcotics Anonymous. We may have thought it was our destiny to be addicts, to live and die in our addiction. Surrender, on the other hand, happens after we accepted the first step as something that is true to us and have accepted the recovery as our solution. So there's a huge difference between resignation and surrender. It's the spiritual principles that shape my personality. It's stuff like honesty, open-mindedness, willingness, being honest. When I first came into Narcotics Anonymous, like the basic text say, for the first time when I said, my name is Kirk, I'm an addict, I finally got honest for the first time. I ain't talking about that. I ain't talking about that bullshit level of honesty. I'm talking about on a deeper level who you are. That began to shape my personality. I didn't know it. It didn't look like that because I was still suffering the pains of fucking withdrawal. It didn't look like that. Who would have thought through pain we would get gifts? I gotta know what change looked like. It don't always look pretty. But if I stay committed, look. I ain't here. Got another one somewhere. I'm looking for it works how and why. It's trying to hide. Sixth step, it works how and why. And look, it says in the sixth step, it works how and why. We need to be willing to make a commitment to pursue our recovery despite the continued presence of character defects in our lives. We mustn't give up even when we think no change has taken place. I'm talking about a cunning. Look, that's why the literature is so important. Look, if I don't know my enemy, I don't know how this enemy attacks me, look, then how do I know to combat this? We are often blind to our internal changes, but we can rest assured that what is happening on the inside of us is evident on the outside to others. Our job is to keep on walking, even though it may feel as though each step requires more strength than we can muster. No matter how difficult our progress, we must persevere. We can make use of the sheer grit and the tenacity it took to maintain our active addiction by being steadfast and strong in our efforts to sustain our recovery. So change don't look like change. But the courage was, look, I came in here surrendered. Look, when I came in here, man, look, like I said, I didn't have nothing. Look, the gift, I was giftless. I got the gift from y'all. I got the gift from Narcotics Anonymous. Kirk, tell the truth. Where did the gift come from? It came from y'all, man. It came from y'all sharing with me, Kirk. You ain't got to live like that no more. Your life can change. Look, I ended up getting an associate's degree, a bachelor's degree, an MBA, a master's in business administration with a focus in business economics, graduated summa cum laude. Talking about a fucking crackhead. I had a straight shooter this big. I kept it in my shoe. Right? Because I didn't want to lose it. I'm talking about being relegated to a 3.5 block radius for over 4 years. I'm talking about, fuck, do you remember being stuck? I'm talking about stuck, goddammit. Stuck for real. Do you remember? And what this thing does, it frees us up, man. Look, the literature talks about freedom ain't free. Look, it talks about we value freedom so much, but experience it so little. We talk about wanting to be free. We talk about freedom. This is after being clean. It says, but we experience it so little. I'm talking about a program, man, that I have you living a half life. Clean. Clean. Because I'm fronting. And I can't tell you the truth. Literature say we suffer from wanting to save our face and our ass at the same time. We talk about a cunning enemy. And being able to share with people, look, I'm going to go back to recovery and relapse again. I'll tell you why I don't like doing this. Page 82. Writing about what we want. Look, our literature say our message is meaningless unless we live it. I've always been able to talk shit. But there was always this diversion between my walk and my talk. Writing about what we want, what we are asking for, what we get, and sharing this with our sponsor or another trusted person helps us work through negative feelings. The reason I won't write about what I want is because if I don't get it, I'm wondering how you gonna look at me. So I'll keep my goals, my aspirations as a secret. Because when I see you, you're going to ask me, are you doing what the fuck you wrote about? But if I don't write about it, you ain't got shit to ask. Telling you, man, we're dealing with a cunning enemy. Look, I want to get from this program, man. Look, I bought into the program. A new way to live. Our message is that an addict, any addict, can stop using drugs, right? Lose the desire to use and find a new way to live. I want the back part of the message, too. To be able to find a new way to live. Right? To be able to try things, man. Step out on faith, right? Have enough courage to tell my sponsor and my friends the things I want and try to go for it. If I don't get it, that's fine. But at least I ain't letting the disease of addiction punk me out. I'm tired of it punking me out. I'm tired of not going for shit. I'm tired of just settling. I'm tired of living a half life. I'm talking about fucking clean. I'm talking about with a master's degree. That master's degree was over 10 years. That was over a decade ago. Man, I'm talking about living the dream. Being able to do things. I've had accomplishments after that. It ain't about that. But it's about, do you have the courage to go for what you want? I don't always have the courage. That's why I come to y'all and share with y'all what I want. Look, our literature in the basic text say we share for this reason so that the fear slips away. The base of the triangle of self-obsession is fear. It says all character defects come up out of the triangle. I'm afraid. It's hard standing up in front of people, telling you the truth, telling you the things that you know what I mean? Just being able to share. This shit ain't easy. It may look easy. It ain't easy to be able to do this. And then to have people talk shit. Oh, if you do this long enough, they talking shit. Some of it may be true, I don't know, but the point is it don't matter. The point is, can you do it? Can you put yourself out there? Not here. Can you do what's in your fucking life? Quit looking at me. Look at your own life. Can you do what the fuck you need to do for your life? And share with me. That shit is hard. It's easy to look at me like, what the fuck he talking about? You know what I'm fucking talking about. I'm be just sitting there. Shit, I know y'all understand. Y'all got goals and dreams. Are you living up to them? Fucking looking at me like I'm crazy. I'm fucked up, but I ain't that fucked up. I like doing that to mess with people, man. Look, basic tech say, look, meetings reduce the shock of change. People is in shock in here. They are, man. People come to meetings for years. For years. And don't nothing change on their face. Their expression be still just as fucked up as it was when they first came in. I'm talking about years clean, man. That's why you got people who, look, you got people in Narcotics Anonymous who've been in here over a decade. Over a decade. Do not have the working knowledge. Do not have the working knowledge of the 12 steps. Over a decade. I'm not talking about a few. You know who the hell I'm talking about. I ain't even from this area. I know it's true. It's a worldwide fellowship, man. Look, man, God gave me a second life. I fucked the first one up. I don't want this life to be like that one. If I got a chance to change, the courage is I got it from y'all. Y'all gave me the courage, man. It's something about addicts, man. It's something about y'all. The ones working the program are on fire, man. You can see it. You can see the enthusiasm. They ain't got to be doing this, but they talk about their family. Getting their kids back, right? Talking about moving into houses and going to school and, you know what I mean? Talking about paying off student loans and, you know, doing shit that normal people do. I'm talking about on fire, man. That's the kind of fire that I want. Right? Talking about, man, being able to live. This freedom that we don't experience as much. Being able to live a dream. Right? Like your boy, look, Jimmy K talk about what we have in Narcotics Anonymous, what we do when we share this message. Talking about the founder of Narcotics Anonymous. What we do, what we have here is a sacred key. We have a charge, man, to pass this on to other people. Right? I'm talking about a sacred keep, a keepsake. The past is on, a life-changing message. I'm talking about for the desperate dying. In desperation, we sought help. We was in trouble when we came in here on a deeper level. And then for this thing to turn our life around, man, on a dime. To live the dream. And I got it from addicts. Look, man, I ain't got no ghetto story. I don't know shit about that. Ain't been to prison, don't fucking want to go. I don't have a problem. I don't have no need to cop nobody else's story. I'm a square. My father was a square. My mother was a square. We lived in a square house. We did square shit. You's a square. No pimping and playing in this. I ain't got none of that, man. I ain't got... Look at me, man. You got to be able to accept yourself on a deeper level. I ain't never been one of those who have been a smooth with women and none of that shit. I've always been the silly... He's a silly motherfucker. You know what I mean? The girls, they see some dudes, they be like, damn. They see me, that's Kirk. That's that motherfucker. Just know who you are, man. Don't be scared who you are. Then you can live that, man. You can take that and move that on. But if I think I'm somewhere where I'm not, try to be somebody that I'm not supposed to be. God didn't make me a pair or a pimp. My mother and my father stayed together till my father died. That's what I seen. That's what I know. I ain't saying I ain't hear no shit in the streets. I ain't say I ain't want to be a motherfucking player or nothing. I'm just saying it ain't in me. There you go. Accept your role. The best I was a trick. At best. You know what I mean? So I just know where I fit in, man. So I try to feel, look, man, look, I'm telling you, I thank God. Right? You need to thank God for where you at. Right? Own where you at. I'm one of them motherfuckers, I can tell you if two parallel lines are crossed by a transversal, alternate interior angles are equal, and corresponding angles on the same side of the transversal are equal. I can tell you about assets, liability, income, capital, and expenses. Assets and expenses have a natural debit balance. Liability, income, and capital have a natural credit balance. God damn it, I couldn't get my mind around. One is too many, and 1,000 is never enough. Right? I can tell you shit about statistical analysis. I can tell you all kind of shit, man. I couldn't keep the dope down, man. You got to know who you are. Accept who you are. Ask God to help you at where you at. You ain't in eighth grade no more, Kirk. You ain't got to worry about motherfucker whether he like you, she like you. Come on, man. Look, our literature say, look, it says we are fortunate. I love the way we word shit. We are fortunate to have one last choice. One last chance, either grow up or die. It says we are fortunate to have that. Make a choice, motherfucker. That's what it's saying. Make a choice. Grow up or die, make a choice. You got to make a choice. You old enough, it's time to make a choice. What are you going to do? God damn it, I need some help. I'm going to try to do something, but I'm going to need y'all help, man. I need help. I know I ain't the only one fucked up, man. I know I ain't. I sponsor enough people. Like the young lady was talking about. Look, I've been doing service work since I got here. I'm vice chair of our area right now. I'm on the fucking activities committee. Registration. Look, I've been doing this shit for almost 19 years. Man, don't miss a beat. Look, it's because I thank God for what happened in my life. Everything I got is a result of Narcotics Anonymous. The degrees, all that shit, I'm level 1, level 2, level 3 certified in contracting, being a fucking contracting officer. I'm a procurement analyst. Look, I got a fucking promotion in a recession, but you a geeker. Don't forget the straight shooter, man. Right? God David, you better tell yourself your story slowly. I'm the one who used to talk about them when they would go to the window. Right? What they doing? What they doing? Right? Then I started fucking with them. I was like, did you hear that? They go through the window, I steal they shit, right? But ain't no fun when the rabbit got their gun. I didn't just go to the window. I'd go outside the house and yell back in the house, is anybody in this motherfucker? Right? I'm talking about paranoid out of my head. I'm serious, man. I used to smoke crack with a straight shooter and a couch in one hand and a straight shooter in another. I'm one of the people up under the couch. Look, roaches couldn't even crawl up under the motherfucking couch. I'm talking about the desperation, man. Look, it talks about if we don't work this program, the paranoia will return. I can't afford it, boy. I still got the old bugaboos. Shit. I got supersonic hearing. I'll be like to my wife, I'll be like, God damn it, did you hear that shit? It'd be somebody shutting a car door three damn doors down from the damn house. She just look at me like I'm crazy, man. Look, the old bugaboos, man, will haunt us. You ain't gonna never have it all together, Kirk. Right? Look, I want y'all to see. Look, I got a fucked up eye. I can talk about it. Because everybody got something going on with them. I can't see your fucked upness, but I know it's there. I know it's there. I know you got it, bruh. I know you do. You ain't fucking fooling us. We know something wrong with you. You ain't gotta like what I share. I'm not here to make friends. Y'all probably won't see. I'm not asked to come back twice in a row in most places. So I'm quite sure I won't be back next year. But you gotta put up with me this year. Hey, man, I'm talking about being serious, man, telling the truth. All the lies, all the rationalizations, all the illusions fade away. I want that to fade away, man. I want to be able to deal with my reality, regardless of how painful it is. Look, I forget where it is, but it talks about Jimmy keeping the, look, this is how tricky the disease, I'm going to pass. It says keeping the illusion of reality. That's fucked up. How could reality be an illusion? Talking about our literature, written by addicts, for addicts, about addicts. How can our reality be an illusion? God damn it, you better know your disease. This thing ain't playing with us. Give a fuck. It don't care about you dancing. It don't care about you having three or four women. It's gonna tear your ass up. I ain't gotta tell you nothing. Look, the literature say dogma. Dogma lacks the power that comes to us when we choose to live a spiritual life. In other words, me telling you what to do don't mean shit. It lacks power. When that motherfucker whoop your ass, right, then you'll choose to live a spiritual life. Fuck what I say. Keep fucking around with whatever you're doing. When it tear your ass up, get you just right. I'm talking about just right. I'm talking about just right. Where you ain't got no more questions. You'll have the courage to change. I'll pay.